right, Chris Collinsworth here, live from a hotel room somewhere in Santa Monica, California. We did the Rams game the other day. I don't want to say it was a stunner because Tennessee is a good football team, but to see the Rams offense sort of shut down the way that they were, that was a little stunning. But now we go off to Las Vegas this week with the Chiefs playing the Raiders, and then we come right back to L.A. for a game with the Chargers. So we are just staying in California, and we've got the great Eric Eager, who is in charge of all things R&D and consumer and gambling and football. He is the most decorated of all human beings at PFF. And Eric, what is happening, brother?
Well, that's very nice of you to say. I do think it was a shocker when the Titans went as 7.5-point underdogs without their best player and went ahead and won against a Rams team that looked kind of unstoppable.
And not the other day, right? I mean, and it really wasn't even this Rams offense. It was so interesting to watch it from my standpoint because Sean McVay had sort of adapted to this new reality that when they had when their offensive line was typically asked to pass protect, it was always off of play action. It was always off of something that, you know, helped the offensive line. Then they started getting into more of this drop back passing style because that's what Matthew Stafford wanted to do. And really for the first time in a game, we saw this offensive line that everybody had just assumed was now so much better and could actually pass protect in a straight drop back kind of system get picked apart by Danico Autry and Jeffrey Simmons and Harold Landry and those guys up front. So it really was a bit of a stunner to see that happen. And I think Sean McVay was stunned as well.
Well, I think we're all stunned a bit by the Tennessee Titans, right? Because going into the year, we sort of like, this is a division winner with not a great defense. They lose Malcolm Butler, Adoree Jackson, guys like that from the secondary. And what we mispriced was, you know, basically, you know, productivity and growth from a defensive line, right? Like Jeffrey Simmons, Danico Autry, even Bud Dupree, guys like that. Like they terrorized the Rams the other day. And you know, in a way that I don't think anybody expected. And they've done that for a decent part of the year. And, you know, you look at their wins in succession, it's, you know, Buffalo, Kansas City, the two teams that played in the AFC title game last year. And then it's Indianapolis to basically finish off their division. And then the Rams, we all thought at some point there was going to be a letdown at some point, but the Titans just didn't give one.
Right. 6-0 against teams that made the playoffs last year already. And they're coming up on the easy part of their schedule. So this is a team in the AFC that really is going to be tough to catch, you know, in my opinion. They didn't have a great night on offense, you know, but they got enough plays on the defensive side of the ball to sort of make up for it. And I did see finally out of Julio Jones, even though it really didn't show up in the game as much, but Julio was running. Like I went back and watched Julio Jones's routes and I got a couple of social media things about, didn't you see the Seattle game and the play? I was like, yeah, I watched it. It still wasn't Julio Jones running. Now, he made plays. A lot of them were jump balls and different things down the field. But it wasn't Julio Jones running the way that I had seen it. And the reason I knew that was because as soon as I turned off the Julio Jones tape, I put on the A.J. Brown tape. And I went, that's the way Julio Jones used to run right there. And then when you came into the stadium and you saw Julio, that's when it started to make magic out there. So I do think that, you know, if Bud Dupree starts getting healthier, which he should, they're going to get their cornerback Christian Fulton back later on in the year. And Chris Jackson's come in there and played well for them. So this is a team built around Kevin Byard on the back end that seems to have just this, you know, aggressive approach right now and this sort of work ethic that is just working across the board. And when I look around the rest of the AFC, you go, who? You know, who is it that you go, We can't beat them. You know, the Ravens, the Chargers, the Bills just got beat by Jacksonville. Pittsburgh's on a nice little run right now. New England. This well could be one of those years that we're seeing the well-coached teams off the bottom find their way into the playoffs and make some kind of run.
Yeah, you even see it with, you know, Tomlin, who I think is a Coach of the Year candidate, given how his team's played, and they're still 5-3. Vrabel, very impressive. You bring up a really good point, though, about Julio Jones. One of the things that we've done in our research is we've shown it's not the best player on an offense. It's not the second best player. It's that third and fourth guy on a team. And, you know, the Titans have had one of their legs chopped up from under them. And if Julio Jones emerges and is that second guy to A.J. Brown, they can be fine. If he continues to be banged up and things like that, you know, teams can shut down top-heavy offenses. And to me, that's the one leak with the Tennessee Titans, who are right now, as you said, in control of the AFC.
Yeah, so many different, really interesting things going on around the league right now. And maybe we start with the Arizona Cardinals. You know, this is a team that goes into a huge game with the 49ers this past weekend. No Kyler Murray, no Hopkins. Colt McCoy goes 22 for 26 for 250 yards. Chase Edmonds is hurt in the game. James Conner comes in. Marcus Golden now has 9 sacks on the season. And you start looking for somebody with a little consistency. I mean, we thought that was going to be the Rams. We thought that was going to be the Dallas Cowboys in the NFC. And they all sort of crumbled. The Buffalo Bills in the AFC, they lose to Jacksonville. So you start looking for some kind of consistency in football this season. And you just keep coming back to the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah, the Cardinals were 6-1 to win the division prior to the year. Far and away the lowest of that division. You know, the team that it reminds me of, Chris, and all the way down to an MVP quarterback missing some time and kind of a journeyman backup being able to win without him, the 2015 Carolina Panthers, right, where you're looking at a team, you know, that quarterback can sort of go either way, right? Right now we're getting MVP caliber play and weapons that are kind of in and out, right? DeAndre Hopkins didn't even play in that game. And they're still running all over, you know, on the outside, you know, in the middle of the field with James Conner. It's a team that, like, much like the 15 Panthers, it took us like the whole year to believe in them, but they were sort of real the whole time.
Yeah, you know, and then you get Chandler Jones, who's finally gets another sack after 5 on opening weekend. So a very interesting team. And then I wanted to fall in love with the Dallas Cowboys. Dallas Cowboys goes into your beloved Minnesota Vikings unit last week and with a backup quarterback and basically takes apart that team with Cooper Rush. So you go, okay, I got it. The Cowboys team, like we're talking about with Arizona, is so good that it doesn't matter if Kyler Murray plays. It doesn't matter if Dak Prescott plays. And to me, that's a sign of a championship caliber team. Great. Now the Dallas Cowboys going back home. Dak's going to come back in healthy. They don't just lose to Denver. They get destroyed by Denver. I want you and all your mathematics to explain that one to me.
Well, it's interesting because when I bet games, there are ones I fall in love with right away. And it's like, I like this one and I'll bet it all week. And I'll wake up on a Saturday and be like, oh, Greenline likes Denver plus 10. And I'm like, really? This is a Dallas team that just beat Minnesota on the road with its backup. And ultimately, I think what the math is saying is no team is actually that good, right? Denver is a 5-4 team, decent quarterback, great defense. And that team on any given Sunday, and we actually saw it, underdogs won a ton of games this weekend, especially double-digit ones. Any given Sunday, these things can happen. And I think the math is far more ready to tell you that than our brains would.
I mean, it's truly insane. And then, then you start going, all right, where are the teams down the list? And you have to put the Kansas City Chiefs as one of those down the list kind of football teams. And but I just got finished watching the tape on them, and their offense is way forcing the ball too much to Tyreek Hill. There were times there were guys literally running open and converting. That's a problem. Then you've got the problem of on at least two, maybe three third down situations, they drop balls that hit the receivers right in their hands, right? And so I think the Kansas City Chiefs are fixable on the offensive side. I really do. But when you start looking at now, they've got Chris Jones back playing inside where he belongs at that disruptive Aaron Rodgers three technique situation. Frank Clark is now healthy and is beginning to look like he could possibly look out there. Melvin Ingram comes in there and gives them a little pop on the edge, which they've desperately needed. Legarius Sneed is making plays all over the field. Devontae Adams, they threw the ball about 14, 15 times to him. He had about 50 yards total in the game. And it wasn't because Jordan Love, you know, couldn't throw it at all. I mean, he made some throws. He was covered for the better part of that day by those Kansas City cornerbacks. So is there a little vision where you go, okay, that offense is not going to turn around overnight, but we still have a high school football season to go before we even get to the playoffs?
Yeah, the defense has become passable, right? You're talking about like 14, 15 points a game the last 4 weeks. They got Daniel Sorensen off the field. The other one that I really like for them is Willie Gay, the second-year player from Mississippi State. He's a fast linebacker. They were really slow defensively when he was hurt. As you said, Chris Jones, 7 pressures on Sunday, played just 2 snaps on the edge. So he's back to where he's supposed to be. That Packers-Chiefs game was a microcosm of what I said about basically secondary receivers needing to step up. For the Packers, they just don't have any. And for the Chiefs, you know, Kelsey's been a little slower. When we've done the NGS research on the field, he's been about, you know, a tenth of a second slower every single year for the last 3-4 years. It was bound to kind of regress a little bit for him. But neither team had like that second wide receiver that just took the game over. And when you play a good team that can cover, and this probably is in your research packet for the week, Chris, but the Chiefs are one of the best teams in the NFL defending wide receivers, but they're one of the worst at defending tight ends. And Green Bay being without Robert Tonyan really helped them. And, you know, the Packers not having a wide receiver after Adams really, really hurt them. Does that, you know, with Darren Waller this week against the Raiders, does that like regress? When you had the game last year, the Chiefs couldn't stop anybody. And you know, does that happen? Because right now they're winning because their defense is being okay and buoying a team with a kind of below average offense right now.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to talk about a little bit is the quarterbacks. Jordan Love, we get a chance to see him in a legitimate situation. Had some moments, probably tried too hard to get the ball to Devontae Adams during the course of the game. And Trey Lance is the other one. We saw Trey Lance play against Arizona a few weeks ago and didn't look a whole lot different than Jordan Love. Justin Fields, on the other hand, playing for Chicago in the game last night, is PFF's highest graded quarterback. So now are we snap judging Jordan Love? Are we snap judging Trey Lance after poor opening opportunities to start in this league? And is it really just a matter of, hey, stupid, you got to let him play a few games. You got to let Justin Fields play, and then you'll get these guys playing at the highest level of the NFL. As you look at this, what are you thinking?
I agree with you. I mean, I think experience is so important. And I think with both Lance and Love, I didn't come away from the game thinking this guy can't play, right? There have been quarterbacks where you watch their first game and you're like, this guy has no shot. And I don't think I felt that way about either guy. The problem is like in both circumstances, because Green Bay has Rodgers and the Niners seem unwilling to sort of admit that this season's lost, they're not going to get that until the bullets are flying. At least with the Bears, they're going all in with Fields this year, and for better or worse. Now, they probably would have liked to have a win last night because that would have put them, you know, right in the thick of it in the NFC. But, you know, it was still a fun performance to watch.
But with Fields, is it well worth it, right, to have a lost season? Is it well worth it if the Bears really do have QB1 now to think about here? I don't care if they win another game between now and opening day next year. It makes no difference to me. All I care about is that this guy is there. Now, to the GM and head coach, it may matter a lot because it may end up costing them their jobs. But did they also do their job in making the decision, much like the Rams had to? They went all in on a quarterback, didn't go the way that they wanted it to. They go get Matthew Stafford, and they have, you know, two losses on the season. So, and the owner forgave them, right? The owner said, okay, I get it. That didn't go the way we wanted it to. Let's not mess around. If this isn't who we want, let's go make the deal and let's stand by it. Now, if the Chicago Bears do the same thing and they go, okay, that wasn't what we wanted. Let's move on from our quarterback that we missed with the second overall pick. And now let's go draft a kid and we're going to suck it up again. And we're going to have a lost season in 2021, but we now have a chance. So does that group now get punished for doing probably what was right for the organization, but because they're going to go, you know, 6-11 this year, they all are run out of there. I mean, that's a tough call.
If I was an owner of a team, I would probably give general managers and head coaches a time frame that was exactly what you described, which is you get two rookie quarterbacks. Because to your point, like if you look at some of these teams around the league, they're just unwilling to move on from the Kirk Cousins of the world or the, you know, Andy Dalton back in the day with the Bengals, right? And like those middle tier guys that keep you from getting fired, but don't give you a chance to win a Super Bowl. I feel like if you made the incentive structure for these owners and head coaches better, you could probably elicit that better decisioning. Because going back in the draft and drafting a guy, given how much he'd cost, it's trivial that that's the right decision. But a lot of these teams just want to be relevant in December so that they can keep their jobs.
Yeah, the only thing that matters is somebody who has lost two Super Bowl games. I was in two, lost them both. Nobody has ever spent any time in my life saying, oh my gosh, what an amazing accomplishment it was that you made it to the Super Bowl, that you won the AFC championship. I've never heard that in my lifetime.
Well, and also no one cares that the 1987 Bengals were terrible. No one cares.
Correct.
Because
the only thing that matters is, did you ever win it all? So the only discussion in my mind that is ever relevant is, does that quarterback give you a chance to win a Super Bowl championship? Period. That's it. That's the only thing that matters. And if you're playing for anything less than that, then you're in an ownership position for the money. And that's it. There's no other explanation, because nothing else at the end of the day, historically, legacy-wise, or otherwise, means anything.
By the way, I blame the 87 Bengals on the player strike and not any play on your part.
Yeah, me too. Actually, that was the funniest year, because we're sitting there 1-0. We have the 49ers, and we're getting ready to go into the replacement game. We've got a 4-point lead and the ball on fourth down with 6 seconds to go. We try to run a pitch play to James Brooks. He's tackled in like 2 seconds. They throw up a Hail Mary to Jerry Rice in the end zone. Now we're 1-1 instead of 2-0 going into the bye. They bring in our replacement players, who they must have spent like 50 cents on. They go 0-3. So we come back, we're 1-4. In 86, we win 10 games. In 88, we win 12 games and go to the Super Bowl. And in that year, I
feel like the point is that, like, a lot of people, they're so afraid of having a bad season that they avoid the great seasons. In some ways, over-optimizing for being a contender in December basically makes you ineligible for being a contender in February sometimes.
There's something to be said for that. There really is. All right, so now let's get into some of the other teams. The Russell Wilson comeback. Apparently, the finger's fine. The doctor's like, I'm a genius. That was a miracle cure. My God, everybody in America should come to me for their finger surgery. Look what I've done for Russell Wilson. But is it too late? You know, I mean, it is the NFC. We have all these front-running teams out there. But so clearly it's not over at this point. But in your mind, can Russell Wilson bring him back? And does Odell Beckham Jr., if in fact he does sign, we've got the great tease going on right now, probably at the time that the podcast ends, he will have signed or not signed. But as of the time we're doing it, we don't know. Does Odell Beckham Jr. help put Seattle over the top? Because they have two great receivers. They drafted another one with their first pick in the draft. Where does Odell fit into this thing?
Yeah. Here's how the NFC looks for the seventh spot. It's Atlanta, 30% to make the playoffs, Minnesota, 29%, and then you go Seattle at 24%, San Francisco at 22%. So they're right there. They have the 18th hardest schedule in the NFL, so not a terrible path. They're probably the best equipped to do it, right? I mean, best quarterback there by a country mile, in my opinion, Wilson. So if you're a Seattle fan, you have to be a little bit optimistic. You actually wish Geno Smith would have gotten you a win against New Orleans or Pittsburgh. But at 3-5, you're more than in it. You know, the team that's ahead of you, a team that's currently in the playoffs, is the 4-4 Falcons. So to me, that you have every chance in the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing when you look at the NFC right now. You have all those teams running away with it on the front end. So basically, five teams would have to just collapse at this point to not be one of the seven playoff teams: Arizona, Green Bay, Tampa, Dallas, and the Rams. The worst of those is 7-2 at this point.
All of them have 94% chance or better to make the playoffs.
Yeah, the Saints at 5-3 just somehow continue to do whatever it is that Sean allows them to do there. And then the Atlanta Falcons, although I do think the Falcons will continue to get better with Arthur. I think that's a play style that takes a little while to adapt to it, a la the Green Bay Packers or the San Francisco 49ers or the Tennessee Titans or one of those teams that are going to play along those ways. But in the AFC, it is completely the opposite of that. I mean, right now, the bottom teams in the AFC, amazingly, after the way they started, are the Pittsburgh Steelers and the New England Patriots. And who the heck wants to play those guys in the wild card round of the playoffs on opening day of the playoffs? You know, no matter what you want to think about Baltimore or the Chargers or the Bills, you know, that's a rough go with those teams.
Absolutely. You get Browns, New England this week to kind of unjumble it a little bit. But even you talk about the AFC West, you know, Justin Herbert with the Chargers, Patrick Mahomes with the Chiefs, Derek Carr with the Vegas Raiders. One or two of those teams are going to be in that range too, whoever doesn't win the AFC West. You know, even your Bengals, 5-4, like Joe Burrow's had his moments, the defense is okay, you know, when it matches up well. Like, they're all tough outs. Like, every single, like, it's not much like last year, right? The seventh seed in the AFC had 11 wins. The seventh seed in the NFC had 8 wins. You know, it's going to be very similar this year, with the seventh seed is going to be a pretty decent ball club.
NFL fans hungry for a big win this week? Well, DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, has you covered. New customers can bet just $5 on any NFL team to win their game. And if they do, you win $200 in free bets. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, it will be soon. But DraftKings, not going to leave you empty-handed. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings daily fantasy sports contests. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code PFF. Bet just $5 on any NFL team to win their game and win $200 in free bets. If you win, you win with promo code PFF this week at DraftKings Sportsbook. An official sports betting partner of the NFL, must be 21 years of old or New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit, $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Whether it's football success or financial savvy, the right questions can help set the stage for winning strategies. Western and Southern is teaming up with PFF to share insights that can help you get ahead on both your fantasy team and financial scoreboards. You want to hear about my old playing days? No, you don't. Or behind the scenes with Al Michaels on Sunday Night Football? Well, how about a need to know for your financial future? All can be good questions. And now you can ask about any of those things, or both, or all of them. And every football or financial question you ask earns you a chance to win a catered party for February's big game, and we all know what that is. Check out Chris Collinsworth's podcast and Western and Southern's Instagram for answers to the best questions each week. Submit your questions at westernandsouthern.com/askchris. One more time, westernandsouthern.com/askchris. And if you're watching on YouTube, check out the link in the description below. Remember, with Western and Southern, you can rest assured on game day. And drum roll, please. This week's question from Mike in Tennessee. Halfway through the NFL season, who is your MVP pick thus far? Tough one. Probably would have been Derrick Henry at this point. He got hurt. Might have been Matthew Stafford. He didn't play so well. Tom Brady didn't have a great end to his game the other day. A lot of good ones. I probably would stay with Tom Brady at this point. But believe me, it is wide open as we come down the stretch here at the Kentucky Derby. So right now you can get 25% off any PFF subscription if you use code Collinsworth, C-O-L-L-I-N-S-W-R-T-H. Grades and data are live for every single player who logged a snap last week. Go check out the highest graded players from week 9 and look to find early value on spread picks and player props for week 10. What you can get with a PFF subscription, listen to this. All of PFF's locked article content, that can be frustrating, but you would become part of the club at that point. PFF's NFL and college football betting dashboards are grade-powered projections, cover probabilities and betting values. 0 to 100 grades on every single player, including the top rookies on every team. Player prop tools, which show plus-minus values for every NFL prop. That one could be really valuable. And so much more. Support the pod. Help me pay all these fine young men working on it and use promo code Collinsworth for 25% off any sub. So let's jump down to the, go ahead, Holly, you can walk by her. She's going out on the town here. We're in a tight quarters. So the Jaguars at the Colts, did we learn anything about the Jags in that game when Josh Allen beat up on Josh Allen in this one? Because basically the Buffalo Bills now, was it the Jags defense that was so good, or is this just a Buffalo Bills team that can't run the football anymore? Never maybe were great at it, but I want to say they've got like 160 yards rushing in the last four games combined by their two top backs.
I think the Bills are one of the teams in the NFL that's getting the byproduct of everybody engineering their defense to defend the Chiefs, right? So the two high stuff, the, you know, let's clamp down a wide receiver stuff. And if you can't, like, as you said, run the football, it puts a lot of pressure on the quarterback. And one of the interesting thing about the Jags is they started this season trying to be basically a man coverage team, and now they're basically a zone team. And, you know, zone kind of muddies the water, and it makes good offenses sort of have to cross the street 10 times on the way to the end zone. And Josh Allen has that inconsistency in him, right? And you saw it a lot on Sunday. And Josh Allen had a great individual performance for the Jaguars. So it was a little bit of both, but Jaguars kind of have mixed up their defense a little bit. And the Bills are kind of a recipient trying to basically be the Chiefs on offense. They're getting the negative effects of all these teams kind of figuring out how to stop the Chiefs.
You know, it's a really good point, because patience is a hard thing, and patience also engages referees. When you're trying to go 10 or 12 plays, referees get tired of not throwing flags. Eventually, they want to throw a flag. You're going to find a hold somewhere on the football field at some point, and now you've got work to do, you know? And I think that the defensive coordinators are playing to two things. You're going to get a penalty, or we're going to stop you in the red zone. And they've almost given up on stopping legitimate offenses between the 20s. Like, that's the theme that I keep hearing as I go around. It's like, yeah, you know, okay, right, it's impossible to stop these guys between the 20s. But if we can make them run it, right, we don't care. We're just going to lure them right in there. The other thing I was going to tell you, Eric, is that I think that the Kansas City Chiefs now, that shell coverage, that 2-4-6 coverage on the back end. And so what's happening is these RPO games, that extra defender, that extra safety, and that is now the guy that's coming down to take away Tyreek Hill on the slants of the RPO. And then that in the digs, and that frees up the linebacker to run past the slant and go take the flat or whatever else there might be in there. But a lot of times the running game, and watching this thing, it looks like the running game is built around the linebacker, that backside linebacker, who has to kind of hang in that in-between zone. So if he's completely out of it, that's five offensive linemen against five defenders, and you run the ball every time. So that hang linebacker kind of has to be that guy that does both in there. But I think the quarters coverage or the shell coverage on the back end is creating some help on that slant that used to be a nightmare for the 49ers and the Chiefs and all these RPO teams.
Well, and they don't care about the run. And like, this is actually kind of fun. I tweeted this out because my thesis was a team like the Chiefs and the Bills should stop running as many RPOs, because RPOs kind of have this what's called the Simpsons paradox, which is RPOs are better than non-RPOs, but more RPOs now result in runs, and runs are worse than passes, right? So essentially this RPO game, if you just constrain to passes or runs, doing the RPO is better. But if you run too many RPOs, it makes you run the ball too much. And as you know, RPOs, the offensive line is not getting a push, right? It's illegal, right? And so forcing these teams that are high RPO offenses to run the ball out of RPO, as opposed to just like lining up and running power or some other regular run scheme, has really had a negative effect on these offenses.
Well, that was the thing that I saw with the Kansas City tape, was they came out in the first quarter and they drive right down the field and score a touchdown. How did they do it? They did it with a lot of powers, mm-hmm. some counters, where they could get their big offensive linemen on the edge, blocking down and then pulling around with the Blake Bells of the world and coming around on the outside. And then they got away from it. Then they started going to the RPO games, and eventually they got a holding call or they got one negative run. Somebody, you know, makes a play on defense. But you're absolutely right that it, what is it? The Simpsons? That's a TV show. I know that.
Yeah, yeah.
The Simpson effect on the outside there is creating some real issues, because that's what they're doing. all the reads for these quarterbacks are, well, there's the safety hanging in the middle. There's that linebacker hanging on the backside. I have to hand it off. And now for Andy Reid, are you going to take the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hands? You know, and if you call it, there's a very good chance that your backup running back is going to be the guy with the ball.
Well, and without a push on the offensive line. I mean, that's the really hard part. And that was always the promise of an RPO, was you have this run game, but you keep some of the upside of a pass. And what Andy needs to see is the upside of the pass is gone. The defense has already written that off. They're not letting you pass out of the RPO. So if you're going to run the football, run the football. Stop. Don't mess around with any of this RPO stuff anymore.
Let's spend a minute on the to me, the really interesting game of the weekend, which is the Browns and the Patriots. I kind of feel like I know what the Patriots do and who they are. They're that team that sacrifices the month of September to put in a lot of defenses, experiment with a lot of people, take a lot of looks to see what's going to work and not work. But by the time we get to October, November, December, and especially January, they've played 10 different styles of defenses. They've experimented on the offensive side. They know what their personnel can do and can't do. So are we in the middle of one of those Patriot runs right now, whether it was Tom Brady or otherwise, that after we get out of the month of September and halfway through the month of October, Belichick now has them coached up, rookie quarterback or not, to be able to do things on this team on both sides of the ball, to where not only is this team getting good now, they're going to be a whole lot better in another month?
Yes and no. We have them projected for 9 wins, a 50% chance to make the AFC playoffs, which if you would have said that preseason, you would have been happy if you're a Pats fan. They had the 31st most difficult schedule through 9 weeks. They had the 8th hardest after. So I think, you know, they're being buoyed a little bit by getting to play Sam Darnold and the Jets twice and so on and so forth. If they make it out through this schedule, this difficulty that they have here, then absolutely. I think that they're going to be, you know, and if they do that, Mac Jones would have had to play well. So if you get into playoffs with a good young rookie quarterback, a great coach, I think emerging and underrated weapons on the outside, yeah, they could make a run. I don't know if I'd bet on them to make the playoffs over teams like the Chargers, Cleveland, Kansas City, or the Raiders, but they're going to make it interesting.
So this one's going to have a lot to do with that as well, because a lot of tiebreakers coming into play with the Browns and Pats. The Patriots, 2.5-point favorite. Do I have that right?
Yeah, I think it depends upon where you look. People do like the Browns betting it here. Second straight road game is a little bit prohibitive. But you look at the Browns, they're in a nice spot. Their defense is full of secondary players that are all pretty good. They have a great front four. You know, Myles Garrett's amazing. To me, this team, the floor is Baker Mayfield. If Baker Mayfield plays great football, this is an elite team.
Which he did last week. He was one of the top graded quarterbacks that we had last week. Even with the shoulder. That's the only thing that kind of scares you though, right? I mean, yeah. You kind of get the feeling he is – one hit away from, you know, just having his shoulder fall off. You know, like, come here, Baker, you can't play anymore. Your shoulder fell off. So, you know, it's got to be at least a concern. But playing 17 games, Eric, I swear the thing that it's amazing, it's only one more game, right? It's only one more game than what we're used to. But I can already feel in practices, I can already feel in coaches willing to let a player take a game off because it is a long year. And already, particularly amongst the top end NFC teams, because they feel pretty good, right? Dallas was in that situation against Minnesota. Hey, we have this huge lead. As long as we get Dak back healthy and he doesn't pull that calf again, let's just go ahead and take 1 week off. Even if we get beat in Minnesota, no big deal. Obviously, they went ahead and won the game. But I'm seeing that more and more. And I'm also seeing less and less practice as I go around, because they understand that these guys have to survive. And does it really make a difference how you're playing in October and November compared to, we just have to get all our guys, we have to bring all our horses to December and January, and then we're going to have a chance. Seven teams, if you're one of the better teams, you're going to make it. You're going to make it somewhere in that playoff mix. So I just kind of get the feeling that the season, I always kind of feel like the season starts at Thanksgiving anyway. But in this year, I really feel that way with the way that a lot of these coaches are approaching it.
Well, you think of last year, Tampa kind of did what you said. They kind of sleptwalk through the first 11 games of the year, 12 games of the year. They had a late bye, then they go on a run. Kansas City in 19 started 6-4, had a late bye, went on a run. If you look at where are the late byes, week 12, Kansas City, Arizona. That looks nice. Week 13, Cleveland, Tennessee, Green Bay. That looks pretty nice. And week 14, you have New England and Indianapolis among contenders. You know, I think that's going to be a big edge for those teams for exactly what you're saying, which is teams are trying their best to kind of manufacture buys for certain players right now. And, you know, when they get their legitimate one, the later it happens, the better they're going to be able to capitalize on.
I tell you, the other thing that's going to happen at the end of the year this year, with only one bye week and only one team getting the bye, we're going to have it narrowed down to probably that team already being clinched or only one of two teams having a chance in each conference to be able to get that. So there are going to be a lot of teams that go, I don't care if I play on the road in the wild card round of the playoff. I would rather give my guys a week off in weeks, whatever it would be, 18. And so I think there's a chance you could see almost every contending team giving their guys a week off because they've got to play the following week in the playoffs. And you don't want to have somebody with that late bye, including the bonus bye right before the playoffs, coming in there. The week 18 of the year this year, it might look like another exhibition game amongst the contending teams as we get there.
Hopefully there'll be at least one game so we can fill Sunday Night Football, right?
That would be nice.
But I agree. And another sneaky thing is I believe assistant coaches, which are up for head coaching jobs, which are going to be most likely on contending teams, can interview in week 17 and 18 now. So that might also make the choice to throttle back in week 17 or 18 easier for contending teams.
Yeah. Let's wrap it up with this. I want to hear who are your two favorite bets of the week. I only want two.
Okay. New Orleans, Tennessee, under 44.5 for a lot of what you're talking about. And then Detroit, Pittsburgh, under 43.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Jared Goff just feels like an under quarterback to me.
I think that's true. All right. Now, I want to wrap it up with sort of the gambling news of the day. You're so involved with everything we do at PFF with the gambling. And I know you guys have been on an incredible run here, like 15 units above in the NFL over the past 3 weeks. That's remarkable. As the data continues to pour into PFF, you guys are getting better and better and better. But let's talk about the state of gambling at this point. New York just passing. How analytics ties into that, how PFF ties into that and the data, and how many people are now coming to us and looking for that data because they want to write their own algorithms and do their own things with their business.
Well, I think that's a great point, right? Like, and you look at the northeast of the country where you have New York now passing, Connecticut, New Jersey and Pennsylvania have basically been legal for the last 3-4 years. It's going to have a ripple effect. And to me, gambling is all about finding, you know, angles and finding your ability to sort of exploit them. And they change so often. I was joking with you about the CFL and how, you know, there was a marketplace there where they didn't play last year. And so it was easy to sort of start over. But, you know, that's going to be part of what we want to do is give people the tools to help them sort of make their own models and make their own opinions. But, you know, we provide the data, we provide the insights, we provide, you know, sort of the background info because,
and the tools.
And the more it becomes legal, the more operators are going to open up, and the more operators that open up, the more prop bets or micro bets or things like that, that are going to sort of like pop up. And to me, if you're not helping bettors, not just make picks, but you're helping bettors understand what the markets are shaped like, then you're not doing a good job. And I think we at PFF are increasingly doing a better job at helping people sort of understand the markets, have fun, right? Like this can be recreational, this can be for money making. And it just makes the sport of football, it makes soccer, it makes everything we're going to get into so much more fun when you have, you know, a stake in the ground. And to me, it's exciting.
Yeah. Well, you guys are doing a fantastic job. Thank you for your time here today. We'll see how the bets of PFF this week come out. But it's an exciting time of the year for football for this season. I think it's going to be a fantastic finish to the year. I have literally no idea who's going to play in the Super Bowl. I know I'm going to get a chance to be there and call the game, so I'm pumped about that. But so much uncertainty with this season. I wouldn't even venture a guess at this point as to who I thought was going to be there. But thank you for your time, and we'll see you next go-around.